where the news never stops. LBC News.
All right, let's go live to Washington now for the latest on what's happening at the White House today. It's a big day for Donald Trump. He's going to be welcoming Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as the foreign ministers of Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates, to the White House for a signing of the Arab Accords. Let's get more from our Washington correspondent, Simon Marks. Afternoon to you, Simon. A big day for Trump.
A very big day for Donald Trump, Chris, and it all gets underway in about 7 minutes' time when the Minister of Foreign Affairs from Bahrain becomes the first of the officials to arrive at the White House. Remember, we're going to witness at around 5 o'clock London time the signing of the Abraham Accords. Those are the agreements that are being struck today between Israel, represented by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Bahrain, represented by the Kingdom's Foreign Minister, and the United Arab Emirates, represented by the UAE's foreign minister. These agreements normalize relations between Israel and Bahrain and Israel and the UAE. They are being hailed as a major move towards peace in the Middle East by the man who brokered these agreements on behalf of his father-in-law, President Trump, namely the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner.
What you're seeing now is a significant warming of the relationship between Israel and the Arab countries. You've had the Arab-Israeli conflict that's been going on for decades. You've had America's intervention in the Middle East, which obviously has caused us to have a lot of troops there, which has caused us to spend a lot of money there. And it's been warranted because we've had to fight against the threat of terror coming into America's shores. By bringing peace and bringing these countries together, hopefully it eliminates the threat of terror or significantly reduces it and can significantly reduce our troop presence there and allow us to focus on rebuilding our country as opposed to being focused on, endless wars throughout the world. So, again, you talk about President Trump with art of the deal. Just this month, he was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize twice for his efforts here and his efforts on Serbia, Kosovo. And what we're seeing is a tremendous sea change in the Middle East, which obviously is good.
And Mr. Kushner and other White House officials believe that this is just the start, that there are other Gulf states that may soon follow Bahrain and the UAE's lead and normalize their relationships with Israel. I think it is worth underscoring, Chris, that while President Trump has spoken in recent days of warriors agreeing to lay down their weapons because they're tired of fighting and of Bahrain as being sands loaded with blood, the reality is neither Bahrain nor the United Arab Emirates has ever fought a war with Israel, nor indeed even threatened one. So while there's a lot of talk about peace agreements being signed, in fact, the agreements that are being signed relate to the normalization of diplomatic relations between those two countries and Israel. However, this is a big deal, a major opportunity for President Trump to score a foreign policy win just 49 days away from America's presidential elections. Every single American president craves the idea, covets the idea of hosting a signing ceremony at the White House that advances Middle East peace, and this president today is getting precisely that. So the imagery that we see playing out at the White House over the next 2.5 hours or so is absolutely bound to be making a very prominent appearance in the president's campaign advertisements and his re-election campaign literature. The White House also believes that if other Gulf states can now be persuaded to sign similar agreements over the next few months or years with Israel, that is going to drive a wedge between Gulf Arab states and Iran, and between Gulf Arab states and the Palestinians. President Trump has spoken within the last 10 days or so of the notion that a week after his re-election win, Iran will come knocking on America's door and asking to sit down and strike an agreement with the United States. He then paused and said, all right, well, let's give them a month then, but it won't take very long. There are very few foreign policy hands in this city who think that anything with Iran like that is going to happen anytime soon. But the president firmly believes that he is making it clear to Tehran that they are becoming increasingly isolated in the region, and similarly making it clear to the Palestinians that by failing to engage in any kind of dialogue with the United States and Israel and these broader conversations that have been taking place, they too are getting isolated. Now, the Palestinians respond to that that by accusing Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates of betrayal minutes after the Bahrainis announced they would be signing these agreements today. The Palestinians withdrew their ambassador from Bahrain and warned other Gulf states that they would review their diplomatic relationships with those states if they chose to jump on board and sign similar agreements with Israel. That is perfectly fine as far as the Trump administration is concerned, because they and, of course, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu argue that the Palestinians have done this to themselves. Supporters of the Palestinians will say that President Trump is the one who has driven a wedge between the Palestinians and others in the region. So that debate is going to continue long after the ink is dry on these documents that are going to be signed today at the White House.
Thank you, Simon. Well, of course, we'll bring you more on that as and when it happens. Normally, we'll probably, well, it looks like we'll be live to the White House, as Simon says, about 5 o'clock for more on that signing ceremony. Simon, yesterday we talked about President Trump visiting California because of those wildfires. How did that trip go?
Well, it was not without incident, Chris. Let's just take a listen to what President Trump has been saying within the last few hours on his favourite breakfast television programme, Fox and Friends, on the Fox News Channel, about his argument that what is needed in California to overcome the threat of these absolutely appalling wildfires is not a comprehensive approach to climate change, but better forest management.
You have forests all over the world. You don't have fires like you do in California. You know, in Europe, they have forest cities. You look at countries, Austria, you look at so many countries, they live in the forest. They're considered forest cities, so many of them. And they don't have fires like this, and they have more explosive trees. They have an expression, they thin the fuel. The fuel is what's on the ground, the leaves, the trees that fall, they're dry, they're like a matchstick. You know, after 18 months, if they're underground longer than 18 months, they're very explosive, and they have to get rid of that stuff.
Now, putting to one side the notion that Europe is littered with explosive trees, President Trump yesterday, when he was in California, was challenged on these claims that he makes, that if only better forest management was undertaken, then the wildfires wouldn't be so serious in California. Partly, it was pointed out to him by California officials, that 95% of the forests in California are actually owned by his government, Donald Trump's federal government. They are not California forests, but also, of course, partly because the weather conditions in California are completely different than the weather conditions in those forests of Austria to which the president was referring. In parts of California over the last few weeks, record high temperatures plus very dry winds that have been encouraging the fires that as a result have burnt out of control. But listen to this exchange yesterday between the president of the United States and one California official who was urging him to take climate change seriously and believe the science.
If we ignore that science and sort of put our head in the sand and think it's all about vegetation management, we're not going to succeed together protecting Californians.
Okay. It'll start getting cooler.
You just watch. I wish science agreed with you.
Hey, well, I don't think science knows, actually.
That's the clearest indication of President Trump's climate change skepticism that we have ever seen. Little wonder that Joe Biden leapt on that and referred to Donald Trump in speeches yesterday as a climate arsonist. Other issues making the news here at the moment, of course, include the Bob Woodward book. Mr. Woodward, I have to tell you, is still ubiquitous on American television this morning, promoting Rage, his new book, which is available as of today. Jared Kushner, whom we heard from a little bit earlier talking about the Middle East Accords, was asked on NBC this morning, was it not evident from the president's conversations with Bob Woodward that Donald Trump had lied to the American people about the threat posed to the United States by COVID-19?
The president was very forthcoming with the American people about what he knew and when he knew it. President Trump, obviously, he banned travel from China. He banned travel from Europe. This was an unprecedented pandemic. And as different facts evolved, the president informed the public.
And just to be clear, that is flatly untrue. As the Bob Woodward book demonstrates, Donald Trump knew as early as February the 7th that airborne transmission of of COVID-19 was a substantial threat to the United States, and yet as recently as the weekend, he was hosting indoor rallies for maskless supporters in the state of Nevada. So the idea that Donald Trump has been forthcoming on the risks that COVID-19 presented to the United States is demonstrably untrue. We are 2 weeks away from that issue being debated in plain sight by Donald Trump and his opponent, Joe Biden. The first election debate takes place on the 29th of September, two Tuesdays' time. So President Trump was asked on Fox this morning, how is he preparing for his 90-minute televised standoff with Joe Biden?
Well, I sort of prepare every day by just doing what I'm doing. I was in California yesterday. I went to Arizona, which is doing great, by the way. The state is booming. And done a really good job with the virus, too. You know, it's down to very low. Excellent governor. Excellent in Texas. I've been to Texas right. over the last few days. I've been to Louisiana, Florida. I mean, I've been all over the place. And I watch this guy sitting home and I say, maybe I'm doing it wrong. You know what? Maybe I'm doing it wrong. But he's got the press on his side. Why, I have no idea. Somebody's going to have to explain that.
So it doesn't sound like he's doing very much debate preparation at all. The guy who he said there is just sitting home is, of course, Joe Biden, who will today not be sitting home. He's making campaign appearances in the next few hours in Florida. Huge questions, Chris, about how these debates are going to function with a president who is going to have to be fact-checked consistently by either the moderator of each debate or by Joe Biden himself. Joe Biden has said that he intends to act as a fact-checker on the set of these television debates. It is completely unclear to me how that works, because he'll spend the entire 90 minutes pointing out that President Trump is either lying or misstating the reality of various issues that come under discussion at these debates, and that will eat up all Joe Biden's time to explain what he actually wants to do if he becomes president of the United States. But 2 weeks tonight, it's going to be must-see TV, must-listen-to radio, and we will, of course, be bringing it to you live.
Absolutely, we will. Live here on LBC News. Thank you very much to Simon Marks, our Washington correspondent there, live from Washington.